and saw the Babapakola leaving long, thin streamers in its wake. It was entering Illis's atmosphere. The front of the ship began to glow. Havelock closed the hatch, but while the airlock cycled and they removed their gear, they watched the freighter's death on the wall monitor. Alex kept the Rosie's scopes trained on it the entire time. It drifted for a while, the streamers in the upper atmosphere eventually turning into white smoke with a black heart as the hull burned. When the end came, it was sudden and shocking. The hull seemed to go from a solid object to many small, fiery pieces in the blink of an eye, with no transition. Bajja switched the monitor to the death clock to see how much time he'd bought Felsia. 4 days. The Israel had 4 days. Chapter 52. Elvi. Elvi sat in the darkness, her hand terminal in her lap. She was trembling, and the fear and the anger and the sorrow were like she'd walked back into the worst of the storm. She couldn't feel that now. She didn't have time. She needed to think. The screen didn't have maps, of course. There wasn't a survey of any of this to draw from. And even if there was, she didn't have a connection to the Israel. If the Israel was still in orbit and hadn't fallen into the atmosphere and burned and killed everyone to death, and she couldn't feel that now. She needed to think. The structure, ruins, whatever they were, had to be at least 7 or 8 square kilometers. They'd entered the ruins near Holden's last live signal, but there was still a lot of territory to cover. The locator on the hand terminal screen showed only the local nodes. The other two were Fias and Murtry, and they were grayed out. No line of sight, which was good because it meant that wherever Murtry was, he couldn't see her, and bad because she didn't know where he was. It was a low-level diagnostic, the kind that built ad hoc routing networks on the fly. She'd set it to ask for a renewed route any time it made a connection and alert her when it did. It wasn't much, but it would give her a little warning when Murtry was close, when he had a line of sight, when he could shoot her the way he had Amos, and probably Fayez, and they were dead now, and she couldn't feel that. She had to think. How to find Holden? She had to find him, warn him, keep Murtry from stopping him. She took a deep breath and looked up. Line of sight was a hard thing to manage on the ground, but the space above her was vast and open. If she could find a vantage point, the hand terminal would point Murtry out to her. And if she couldn't find her friend, at least she could locate her enemy. Basic problem solving. If you don't have the data you need, play with the data you have. See if something comes out of it. She'd made it through 3 semesters of combinatorics that way. All right. Her body was still shaking. Still weak. Her mind felt fuzzy. Adrenaline and hunger, and Fayez was probably dead, and she couldn't feel that. She stuffed the hand terminal in her pocket and looked around for a way up. Nothing here was built for a human form. There weren't any ladders or walkways, no catwalks with convenient handrails. It was like a vast body, or a vast body that had turned halfway into a machine. She ran quietly, making as little noise as she could with every footfall. An upwelling of conduits rose from the floor to her right, and she clambered up them, wedging her feet and fists into the narrow spaces between the tubes and hauling up and up and up. There were so many other people who would have done better. Fayez was stronger than she was. Suryam used to climb mountains back on Earth. Elvi didn't particularly enjoy climbing trees, much less strange alien webworks. She went up, not looking back, not looking down. The structure was vast, and the soft glow that permeated everything made the space seem strange, dreamlike. She perched in the crevice where two conduits or arteries met, wedging her leg into the gap. She pulled out her hand terminal. Twice on her way up, the ad hoc network alert had sounded, and she hadn't noticed. Twice, Murtry had been in line of sight. The thought made her throat feel tight. She looked at the reply times. 2/1000ths of a second? That couldn't be right. Radio waves moved at light speed, but they were in air, so that made it, what, 3 × 10⁸? Something like that. Close enough as to make no difference. That'd put him something like 500,000 meters away. There had to be some kind of processing lag in the terminals that was swamping. A new entry popped into the log, and her heart leapt to her throat. Connection refused. She blinked at it. Why would Murtry's terminal accept connections when she was climbing up and reject them when she'd paused? That didn't make sense. Another line. Connection refused. Something like hope bloomed in her. It wasn't Murtry. It was someone else. Someone who wasn't in the charmed circle of RCE trusted networks. It was Holden. She craned her neck, as if just by looking she could find him. The structure was too big. She thought of calling out, but there was no reason to think he'd hear. And even if he did, Murtry would be closer. Murtry. There was a thought. She opened the hand terminal's routing interface again. It had been years since she'd played with network protocols. Most of what she did was about signaling proteins in cells and protein regulation. Her leg was starting to tingle where her weight pressed it into the tube. There was a way to get a copy of Murtry's logs, too. She just had to remember how to set up distributed logging. Something in the structure clanged, the echoes reverberating through the space like a scream in a cathedral. She wondered if Murtry looked up, whether he would see the light of her screen up here in her crow's nest. She waited. Waited. The alert sounded. Murtry connected. She closed her eyes. Okay, she thought. Go away now. Just go away. The alert dropped, and she pulled up the logs, and Murtry's records were there now too. And one line of them was a refused connection. It was like being in maths again. Posit a frightened exobiologist 4 meters off the ground and a violent predatory security man in a direct line from her at points A, B, and C. At point D, the predator had a refused connection with a lag time just under 2/10 of a second because the goddamn fucking processing lag was swamping the signal time and making the whole thing... Only it would be the same lag, wouldn't it? So if she could pull out the difference, the world fell away. Her fingers tapped the screen, shifting to the calculation displays, pulling numbers from the logs, setting up the diagrams. The fear and sorrow and raw animal terror were all still there, but they were just messages, and she could ignore them. Her legs started to hurt and then go numb. She shifted a few centimeters until it hurt again. Holden had been 110 meters from her. He'd been 150 meters from Murtry. She could estimate where Murtry had been based on the contacts he'd made with her. It was like basic trigonometry, where a wrong answer meant death. Holden was approximately, roughly, assuming she hadn't biffed the equations and that the hand terminal's processing lags were identical, in the complex junctions at the center right of the structure, where the conduits joined together into something like a massive black wing. Elvie turned off her hand terminal and started back down. When she reached a surface she could walk on, her legs screamed, pins and needles. She ignored it and started limping as quickly as she could toward the landmark she'd found. She didn't care about Murtry now. She had something to focus on. It was less like making her way through an industrial complex than tramping through a vast forest without a machete. She squeezed through the cracks between dark structures as much growth as machine, ducked and climbed, and once got down on her belly and crawled. She was sure she was making progress, sure that she would get there and find out at least whether her figures had been right, when she stepped out across a flat ledge and almost fell into a chasm. A rumbling came from below, maybe 100 meters deep. A tiny band of lights shifted down there, swirling one way and then the other and then moving on. It cut through the floor of the structure to both sides, all the way to the distant walls. A network of conduits branched above it, and wide, tendon-like connections bridged it far below. She started off along the rim, stepping over white, lumpy growths that seemed to sprout up out of the depths. It only took a few minutes to find a structure that crossed it, but it wasn't a bridge. It was mostly flat, though the edges sloped down into the void. Its surface was a wire mesh over what looked like an endless length of tongue. There was nothing like guardrails, and when she stepped out onto it, the tongue reacted to her, twitching and undulating like it was trying to drag her along. She put her arms out for balance and trotted across the gap. 2 meters, 4 meters, 5, and she was on the other side. She leaned against the wall, her head between her hands until the dizziness faded. The vast, wing-like structure was almost directly above her now. Only close up she could see that it was more complex. Thousands of interweaving growths, with deep, interlocking spirals, and a shifting movement whose source she couldn't identify. She slipped down the far side of the ledge, and into something more like a passageway than she'd seen since she fled into the dark. The passage shifted left, and then right. She followed it, picking her way by guesswork and hope. The ratio of floor to wall to ceiling unnerved her for reasons she couldn't quite say. Tiny flickers of blue light, like fireflies, glowed and went dark all around her. She followed a broad turn, and it opened into a chamber. She screamed. Holden was there, not 3 meters away, a huge insectal thing looming above him. Cruel claws reached out, and spikes like daggers caught the dim and eerie light. She pressed her knuckles to her mouth, unable to look away from Holden's last moments. The artifact shifted toward her, paused, and lifted a claw like it was waving. Holden followed the gesture. "Elvie," he said, "what are you doing here?" We were... She sank to her knees, relief running through her like water. She took a deep breath and tried again. "Mertri took one of the carts when you disappeared. He followed the signal from your hand terminal. He knows you're trying to shut down all the artifacts." A stab of panic took her, and she glanced at the clawed thing. "That's all right, kid," the robot thing said in a tinny belter accent. "It ain't news to me. Amos and Fires and I got another cart going, and we came after them, to warn you." "Okay," Holden said. "You did great. We're going to be fine now. How did you find us?" Elvie held up her hand terminal, took a breath, let it out. "It was complicated."
"Fair enough. What about Amos? Where's he?"
"Mertri shot him. I think he's dead."
Holden's face went pale and then flushed. He shook his head, and when he spoke, his voice was low and careful.
"Amos isn't dead."
"How do you know?"
"If Amos goes down, it's because literally everyone else there has already died. We're still alive. So Amos is too."
"Don't pay too much attention to him," the robot monster said. "He gets a little romantic about these things. If you say the bald guy's dead, I believe you.
Thank you, Elvie said by reflex.
I am sorry about it, though. I liked him.
I did too, Elvie said. And Fires. I heard gunshots when I was running. I think Fires...
How about Murtry? Holden asked.
He's coming. He's behind me. I don't know how far. But he's coming to find you. To stop you.
Why the fuck would he stop me? Holden asked, biting the words.
He wants RCE to have the artifact still working.
That man's kind of an asshole, the alien said. We've got a pretty full plate, though. We're close.
Close to what? Elvie said.
That would be the question, the alien answered. But Holden's gaze was fixed over her shoulder. His jaw was tight and angry.
All right, he said. We've got two things we need to do.
We do? The alien said.
It occurred to Elvie that they were talking to an alien. She thought that was remarkable, and she was a little confused that Holden hadn't remarked on it.
Someone has to find this whatever it is and shut off the planetary defenses, and someone has to shoot Murtry. Not to disagree with you, the alien said, shifting its weight on six articulated legs. One of those seems a little more important to me.
Me too, Holden said. But I don't think it's the same one.
Elvie, I'm going to need you to go and save everyone, okay? She said. All right.
Good. This is Detective Miller. He died when Eros hit Venus, and now he's a puppet of the protomolecule. Semi-autonomous, the alien said.
Pleased to meet you.
Likewise.
Okay, Holden said. I'm going to take care of this.
To Elvie's surprise and unease, Holden walked away, following the passage she'd taken. The alien thing cleared its throat apologetically, only she was fairly sure it didn't have a throat, so the sound was just a kind of conversational inflection.
Sorry about that, the alien, Miller said. He gets an idea in his head sometimes, and there's no talking to him.
It's all right, Elvie said. So,
Right. Saving everyone in the world. Follow me, kid. I'll get you up to speed.
So, it's a distributed consciousness, she said, following Miller through a low archway. She felt lightheaded, and not just from hunger. Fayez was dead. Amos was dead. She was going to die. She was on an alien world. She was talking to a dead man wearing an alien robot. The part of her that could feel things was done, shut off. Her heart was a numbness behind her ribs, and when, if it came back, she couldn't guess who or what she would be.
Except it's not exactly conscious, Miller said. There's nodes in it that are, but they don't run the joint. I'm not actually one of them. I'm a construct based on the dead guy. Only I'm based really closely on him, and he was kind of a bulldog about this kind of thing. At least by the end he was.
So, are you conscious?
The alien robot, the skin the Miller construct was using, shrugged. It was strange how well the gesture translated.
Don't know. Seems like I'm acing my Turing test, though.
Elvie thought about it and nodded. Fair enough.
So I sort of, well, triangulated where the dead spot was in space, if you see what I mean.
Sure, yes, triangulation. I totally understand that, Elvie said.
So, four now.
Four?
Our biosphere, the local organisms, the things that made the gates, and the things that killed them. Four. Miller stopped at a seam in the wall and placed his claws on it, ready to push.
In through here? It used to be one of the major control centers for the planet, like a nerve cluster or something. As near as I can figure it, the dead spot's in here. He pushed. The wall retracted, not sliding back so much as changing conformation. Beyond it, a wide, tall space opened. Hundreds of niches rose, level after level, one above the other, with mechanisms like Miller in each of them. Dots of bright blue light, like fireflies, swirled spiral patterns in the air, riding currents of air that Elvie couldn't feel. And in the center, floating a meter above the floor, was... She looked away, putting her hand on Miller's side to steady herself, then forced her gaze back up. It was hard to look at directly. The margins of the space were bright without illuminating anything or casting shadows, sharp and terrible. It reminded her of the way schizophrenics and people suffering migraines would describe light as assaulting and dangerous. And within that boundary, darkness swirled. It was more than an absence. She could sense a structure within it, layers interpenetrating, like shadows casting shadows. It throbbed with an inhuman power, tidal and deep and painful. Look at this too long, Elvie thought, and I will lose my mind in it. She took a step toward it, feeling the structures and the blackness respond to her. She felt as if she could see the spaces between molecules in the air, like atoms themselves had become a thin fog, and for the first time, she could see the true shape of reality looming up just beyond her reach. Once, there had been a civilization here beyond anything Elvie had ever imagined. Beings that could design tools like the protomolecule, like the rings. They had peopled 1,000 worlds and more, spread through time and through space, and they were gone now. And this, she had no doubt at all. This was the footprint of the thing that had killed them. So, Miller said, moving his claws in a wide, spreading gesture. You need to look for anything, you know, odd. Something that doesn't seem like it fits. She turned to him, confused, and pointed at the uncanny thing in the center of the room. You mean, like that? Miller shifted, alien eyes moving their lenses in the complexity of the mechanism. Like what? That. In the middle of the room. That. I don't see anything, Miller said. What's it look like? The eye of an angry god? Elvie said. Oh, Miller said. The heavy plates of his robotic body clicked and hissed against each other as he shifted. Yeah. Well, that's probably it then. Good work. Chapter 53. Holden. When Murtry pulled himself through a gap in the machinery and walked across the ledge to the narrow bridge, Holden was waiting for him on the other side. His hand was draped casually on the butt of his gun. The RCE security chief gave Holden a vague nod, then carefully examined his surroundings. He looked down into the 100-meter chasm and tapped the narrow, tongue-like bridge with the tip of one boot. He spun once, slowly, peering carefully into the crevices created by the cramped machines. When he was through, he looked at Holden again and gave him a flat, meaningless smile. Holden noticed his hand wasn't far from his own weapon.
You came by yourself, Murtry said. The better plan is to put one person in the open with a second hidden behind the target.
That the one you use? Holden asked. He tried to match Murtry's casual nonchalance and felt like he mostly succeeded. It works, Murtry replied with a nod. So, how does this go down?
I've been wondering that myself.
Well, Murtry said with an almost imperceptible shrug, I need to get over there and stop whatever you people are cooking up. Dr. Okoye seems to think you are going to break the defense network down.
Yeah, Holton replied. Pretty much am. Call it saving people.
Murtry nodded, but didn't speak for a moment. Holden waited for him to reach for his gun. The distance between them, the width of the chasm, was just over 5 meters. An easy shot at that range. Harder when you were rushing because the other guy was shooting back. The lighting was good, and Murtry wasn't wearing a helmet. Risk the headshot? The RCE man's armor looked pretty chewed up. The blast patterns on it made Holden suspect that was the work of Amos's auto shotgun. The chest shot was easier, but it was possible the damage to the armor was mostly cosmetic, in which case his sidearm wasn't going to do much. Murtry winked at him, and Holden suddenly felt like the man was reading his mind as he calculated the best way to kill him. I can't let that happen, Murtry said. His shrug was almost apologetic. By charter, this all belongs to RCE. You don't get to break it. Holden shook his head in disbelief. You really are crazy. If I don't break it, our ships fall out of the sky and we all die.
Maybe. Maybe we die. Maybe we find some other way to stay alive. Either way, the RCE claim remains in force.
Murtry waved one hand, not his gun hand, around the room.
All this is worth trillions intact. We've made incredible advances in material science just by looking at the rings. How much will working technology do for us? This is what we came here for, Captain. You don't get to decide what we do with it.
Trillions, Holden said, unable to keep the disbelief out of his voice. I've never seen a dead person spend money.
Sure you have. They call it a foundation or a bequest. Happens all the time.
This is all so you can make a bequest? Murtry's smile widened a millimeter.
No, he said. I came to conquer a new world. This is how you do that. I understand what I'm doing seems cruel and inflexible to you, but it's what this situation requires. The tools you're using here are the ones that let you get along once civilization takes over. They're the wrong shape for this work. I have no illusions about what it will take to carve out a place in this new frontier. It will take sacrifices, and it will take blood. And things we wouldn't do back where everything's regulated and controlled will have to happen here. You think we can do it with committee meetings and press releases?
I wonder if this will sound like a compelling argument to the people dying in orbit right now.
I'm sorry for them. I truly am. But they knew the risks when they got on board. And their deaths will have meaning, Murtry said.
Meaning?
They are the sign that we didn't give up a centimeter. What we came for, we held to the last gasp. This isn't something humanity can do halfway, Captain. It never has been. Even Cortez burned his ships.
Holden's laugh was half disbelief and half contempt.
What is it with you guys in worshipping mass murderers?
Murtry frowned. A swirl of bright blue lights rose and fell between them, like dust blowing down a desert street.
How do you mean? Murtry asked.
A guy I once knew tried to justify his life choices to me by comparing himself to Genghis Khan.
I take it you didn't find his argument compelling? Murtry asked with a smirk.
No, Holden said. And then a friend of mine shot him in the face.
An ironic rebuttal to an argument about necessary violence.
I thought so too, at the time.
Murtry reached up and scratched his head with his left hand, his short, greasy hair shifting into a configuration vaguely resembling Miller's carapace, a sculpture of curves and spikes. He looked at his fingertips in disgust and wiped them on his armor. Holden waited. Somewhere far behind them, a strange chittering sound rose like cicadas on a summer afternoon.
"So," Murtry finally said, "I'm going to need to come over there."
He gestured at Holden's side of the chasm with his chin. His right hand still hovered over his gun.
"Nope," Holden replied.
Murtry nodded, as if expecting this.
"You going to arrest me, Sheriff?"
"Actually, I was kind of thinking I'd shoot you."
"In the face, no doubt.
If that's what I can hit."
"Well, seems like a radical shift," Murtry said, "for a man who wants to tame the frontier with meditation and committee meetings."
"Oh, no. This isn't about that. Elvy says you killed Amos. I wouldn't kill a single person for your fucking frontier, but for my crew? Yeah. I'll kill you for that."
"They say revenge is empty."
"This is my first try at it," Holden said. "Forgive me if my opinions on it are fairly unformed."
"Will it change things if your boy isn't dead?"
"He was still shooting when I left him." The wave of relief that hit Holden at this almost doubled him over. If Murtry had pulled his pistol and shot at that moment, the fight would have been over. But he managed to keep his face blank and his knees from buckling.
"Is he hurt?" "Oh my, yes. Pretty badly. He killed one of mine before he went down. For a guy who wants to solve problems without violence, you travel in dangerous company."
"Yeah," Holden said, unable to keep the smile off his face. "But he's a great mechanic."
"What about the other one, Faez?"
"Down, not dead. I didn't get to finish him before your boy started blazing away. Neither one was walking, so I just left." The matter-of-fact discussion of why Murtry hadn't just killed Faez chilled Holden's blood.
"So, here's a deal," Murtry said. "I'll let you cross to this side, and you can go check on your man Amos. Save the egghead from bleeding out, too. You have my word I won't interfere."
"But," Holden replied, "you head over to my side and stop Elvy from doing what I need her to do."
"Seems a fair trade."
Holden stopped, just resting his hand on the butt of his pistol, and wrapped it around the grip. He turned his body, getting his feet in position. Murtry gave him just a hint of a frown.
"No,"
Holden said, and waited for the shooting to start.
"So," Murtry said, not moving at all, "you know what people always forget about the New World?"
Holden didn't answer.
"Civilization has a built-in lag time, just like light delay. We fly out here to this new place, and because we're civilized, we think civilization comes with us. It doesn't. We build it. And while we're building it, a whole lot of people die. You think the American West came with railroads and post offices and jails? Those things were built, and at the cost of thousands of lives. They were built on the corpses of everyone who was there before the Spanish came. You don't get one without the other. And it's people like me that do it. People like you come later. All of this," Murtry waved his left hand at himself and Holden, "this is because you showed up too early. Come back after I've built a post office, and we'll talk."
"You done?" Holden asked.
"So, this is our day, I take it," Murtry said. "No way but this way, even if I didn't kill your man. Maybe you killed Amos and Faez, and maybe you didn't. Maybe you're right about the frontier, and I'm just a naive idiot.
Maybe every single person you killed on this world had it coming and you were always in the right. But you have people in orbit and saving them is all that counts. I was going to say, but you're a flaming asshole, Poldin said. But the other works too. You don't cross this bridge.
Well then, Murtry said.
He shifted his stance and his eyes narrowed. The chittering grew louder. Below them, the protomolecule fireflies swirled and shuddered.
Well then.
Holden smiled at him. Mimicking Alex's drawl, he said,
Come on, Black Bart. You always knew it would end this way.
Murtry laughed.
You're a funny...
Holden shot him. Murtry staggered, clutching at his chest and fumbling for his gun. Holden put his second shot into the man's right arm. He tried for the elbow and only managed to get the bicep. Just as good. Murtry dropped the gun onto the bridge in front of him. When the RCE man went to one knee to try and pick it up with his left hand, Holden shot him in the leg. Murtry pitched forward onto the bridge, sending the gun tumbling away into the abyss. Murtry slid to the side, going over the edge, but managed to throw his left arm onto the metal mesh and stop his fall. The whole thing had taken about 3 seconds. As the last echoing report of the gunshot faded, Holden walked out onto the bridge. The uncanny musculature pressed at the soles of his feet. Murtry clung to the mesh with his one good hand, his face tight with pain, but still managing a mocking grin.
You got the balls to finish this, boy? He said. Or are you going to let gravity do it?
Oh, no, Holden said. Then knelt down to grab Murtry's left wrist and haul him toward the ledge. I'm not killing you. At least not until I'm sure about Amos. Holden stepped off the bridge onto Murtry's side of the chasm and pulled the RCE man until his torso was up over the edge. Murtry scrabbled the rest of the way up with his one good arm.
Then what?
He gasped out, lying on his back next to the pit and trying to catch his breath. A small pool of blood was forming under his right arm and left leg.
I take you back, Holden said,
sitting down next to Murtry and patting him companionably on the head. And I burn you down in public with news coverage of the entire thing. Then we throw you in a hole so deep everyone forgets you ever existed. No fame and glory for you, Cortez. Montezuma wasn't impressed by your fire stick this time.
Everything I did was within the bounds of the UN Charter, Murtry said. I acted responsibly to protect the employees and investments of Royal Charter Energy.
Okay, Holden said, then pulled out his med kit and sprayed bandages onto Murtry's two bleeding injuries.
So you've got your defense strategy mapped out. That's proactive thinking. Lawyers will be happy to hear it. Want to hear mine?
Sure, Murtry said, and probed at the wound on his arm. He grimaced, but no blood squirted out. The most powerful person on Earth owes me a favor, and I'm going to tell her you're an asshole who tried his best to make her look bad. It's just a sketch of a plan at this point, but I think it has potential.
That's what passes for justice with you?
Apparently so. Murtry opened his mouth, but whatever he was about to say was lost when the factory exploded into chaos. A wall of blue fireflies shot up from the chasm next to them, and then streaked across the cavernous factory space to disappear into small vents in the walls. All around, the cacophony of massive machines coming to life filled the air. Something flew out of the shadows by the ceiling and swooped low over Holden's head. He threw himself across Murtry, not unaware of the irony in using his own body to shield a man he'd just shot 3 times.
What is it? Murtry said.
Elvie, Holden replied. It's Elvie. Chapter 54. Elvie.
Yeah, Miller said, sounding satisfied. I've got a plan, but I'm going to need your help. I need to get as close to that whatever the hell it is as I can. You can see it. I can't. So this one's on you.
All right, she said. What are you going to do?
The robot shrugged.
Every time you get it. Every time anything reaches into this, it dies. This thing takes down networks like the one I am. I'm going to get connected to as much of the crap on this planet as I can and escort it all into, you know, that. Take it down. Break the system.
Won't that shut you down too?
I think so. That's the thing about using complicated tools. Sometimes the features you're looking for come with a whole lot of baggage.
I don't understand.
It built me to find something that's missing, Miller said. Turns out I'm also a good tool for dying, when that's the right solve. Seriously, I've got practice with this. So, come over here and get me as close as you can to the whatever it is. I don't want to touch it, though. I slip in before I'm hooked up to everything else, and I'm pretty sure you're just boned.
All right, Elvie said, shifting until she could see the robot and the darkness both. Turn about 30 degrees to your left.
The robot shifted with the speed and sharpness of a startled insect.
The boundary's about 0.5 meters in front of you. Why do you need to be close to it?
Well, the thing I'm part of? It may not be conscious, but it's not stupid. When I do this, pretty much all the tools it's got are going to know what I know. And they may not take a forced shutdown well. Whatever else this thing was designed to do, it likes still existing until it finishes its job. It's a survivor. I'm pretty much the opposite of that.
She thought she heard a smile in the thing's voice.
Where had that come from? The patterns and habits in a dead man's brain? Or was that fatalism another good move in design space? Did the universe evolve eyes and wings and sense organs and bitter amusement at the prospect of death all the same way?
Okay, Miller said.
The robot shifted, hunkered down, prepared to spring forward.
We're going in 3, 2, 1.
The impact was like being in the heavy shuttle again as it crashed. Elvie's world contracted to a small space inside her own skull and then slowly bloomed out again in pain. She struggled to sit up, trying to see straight, trying to think. Had Miller exploded? Was she dead? The cacophony of shrieking metal and violence made it hard to get her bearings. She was against the wall. All around her, mechanisms were crawling down from their niches. Many of them were failing, legs scraping at the walls without the strength to pull themselves forward or landing on the ground only to crawl in a panicked, spasmodic circle like insects dying from poison. The air was thick with the mindless chittering of their joints. 3 massive machines had pinned the Miller robot and were pounding it, while Miller's voice shouted, "Shit, shit, shit, shit." One of the attackers caught Miller's claw and pulled, ripping the appendage off in a shower of sparks and bright fluids. He wasn't going to make it. There was no way. A small winged machine with a bright blue margin on the knife-like edge where a beak would be swooped down from above, passed through the darkness, and fell clattering and rolling to the ground. Elvie ran to it, picked it up. It was light enough to carry, as long as her forearm, and sharp at the front. With a howl, she charged the machines that were piling on Miller. The impact stung her fingers. Something struck her across the back and the world narrowed again, but she lashed out with what strength she still had. One of the huge machines turned from Miller toward her, its claws splaying out 3 meters to either side. She jumped back, fell, scuttled. The pulsing, malefic blackness of the dead spot was on her left, and she crawled around it, trying to keep it between her and the massive attacker. The robot skittered toward her, its claws swinging like scythes until it reached the margin of the blackness and crumpled down dead. Inertia rolled its corpse across the floor, legs and claws flopping and limp. The chittering in the room paused. The attention of the artifacts turned toward her. She put her foot on the fallen monster, lifted her fists, and howled. Miller twisted, driving his remaining claw up and through the body of one of the 2 machines that were still at his side. The chittering began again, even more overwhelming than before. The sound itself felt like an attack, battering at her ears, robbing her of her balance. She was in the center of an invisible waterfall, a thunderstorm, a tempest. Adrenaline, more than conscious will, lifted her up over the body of her fallen enemy, and she skirted around the dead spot. Another machine fell from a higher niche, smashing itself on the ground before her. She stepped over it as it writhed. The last remaining fully functional attacker swung at Miller, the blades of its claws plunging deep into Miller's carapace. As Elvie came close, it tried to turn toward her. The claw still inside Miller bound with a deep creaking sound. Miller's remaining claw fastened on the other robot's wrist, holding the attacker's claw close, pulling it in, deeper. A viscous fluid poured out of Miller, filling the air with the stink of petroleum and acid. Elvie scooped a length of fallen robot's leg and slammed it into Miller's assailant, striking sparks. The blows had no effect, other than to confuse the thing. She could no more have injured it than she could will herself to fly up into the air and lift the falling ships by force of will. But the moment's hesitation was enough. Miller pulled himself under the remaining attacker, on his back. 4 of the 6 articulated legs started digging at the robot's undercarriage, belly. She didn't have a good model for this. The unencumbered claw smashed down, knocking shards of metal from Miller's side, but with Miller mostly underneath the attacker, it couldn't get an angle that would let it deliver a killing blow. A thin-limbed, spindly robot skittered through the open wall, sprinting toward the battle. Elvie grabbed it as it passed and knocked it into the dead spot. Bits of plating began to peel off the attacking thing's belly, and Miller burrowed up into it. The filthy and stinking ichor started pouring out in a flood. It was an ugly death, slow and violent and unpoetic. When the attacker had stopped moving, Elvie came close. The dead robot was on top of Miller. The pool of thin liquid all around stung her eyes with its fumes. "Well, that could have gone better," Miller said. "Did it work? Are you connected?"
"Yeah," Miller said. "Not sure how much good that's going to do. There's another wave of these things coming, and I'm not seeing how I get from here to there."
Elvie put her shoulder under the dead robot, pushing as hard as she could. The tendons in her neck ached. She imagined she could hear them creaking. She put everything she had into the effort. There was nothing to hold back for, no later that mattered. Keeping anything in reserve was a waste of resources, because there was no future left. She screamed with the sheer physical effort. The robot didn't even shift. She fell to her knees. With a groan, Miller put his claw out, resting it gently on her arm. When he spoke, his voice sounded distant, muffled, words from a grave.
"Okay, This is going to be tricky, he said. I'm going to need one more favor from you, kid. And we don't have much time before they get here.
Yes, she said. Whatever.
Okay, stand back a little. I'm popping the seals on this thing.
She slid backward, the slime on the floor flowing up to the ankles of her pants. There was a hiss like steam escaping from a hold line, a deep, meaty click, and Miller came apart, the plating and scales of his body collapsing. The thing on top of him rolled away and lay dead on its side. Elvie stood over Miller's corpse. It looked like nothing so much as a huge insect smashed under a giant's heel. The chittering all around her rose to a shriek.
What do I do? Elvie shouted. What am I supposed to do?
Miller's voice came from deep inside the mess.
There's a unit in here. It's about a meter long, bright blue. And there's a row of eight dots along the side. I need you to dig it out.
Elvie stepped forward. The plating was all knife points and sharp edges. She felt the sting where it cut her palms, and the burning where the robotic fluids flowed into the wounds.
I don't mean to be that guy, Miller said, but you also need to hurry.
Trying, she said.
Just saying there are more bad guys, and they're getting a little closer than I like.
All right, I have it, Elvie said. It's right here.
Good. Nice work. Now I need you to pick that up and walk it into the dead spot.
The blue thing was the shape of a huge elongated almond. The surface was slick and soft. She put her hands around it, strained, grunted, and slid forward panting.
You have got to be kidding me, she said.
It may be a little heavy, Miller said.
It's like 90 kilos.
And I'm really sorry about that, but we need to get it into that dead spot now. Try sliding your arms under it and lifting with your back and legs, just like it was a baby.
Baby made from fucking tungsten, Elvie muttered.
You're exaggerating, he said, as she shoved her hands under the thing.
I can't throw this, she said. I have to walk it in.
All right.
Is that thing going to kill me if I go into it?
A new sound rose behind the chittering. A deep, booming sound like a massive drum. She didn't want to think of what might be making it.
If I say yes, does that mean you won't do it?
Elvie braced herself, straining her back. The blue thing shifted up into her lap. She bent her head, trying to catch her breath.
No, she said, surprised at the answer even as she spoke it. I'll still do it.
Maybe, then. I don't know.
Elvie rocked back, keeping the thing, Miller, on her thighs and still getting her feet under her. She felt it start to slide to her left. If she dropped it now, she didn't think she'd be able to get it up again. The booming came closer. Elvie pushed with her legs. Her knees ached. Her back was a single, vast sheet of burning. She pressed the blue thing to her chest, crying out from the pain.
You're doing great, kid. You're doing great. You can do this. Just a little more, but do it now.
She didn't step forward. Just slid one foot a little ahead, shifted her weight, pulled the other foot in. The floor was slick as ice. Not quite frictionless, but close. The booming came again, near enough that she felt the room vibrate with it. She set her gaze on the blackness of the dead spot and moved forward. Another step. Another. Another. She was close now. Her back was on fire, her arms were numb, her fists something that belonged to someone else and only happened to be connected to her. A swarm of silver and blue gushed in the doorway, flowing in the air like a cloud of flies. Elvie pushed, slipped, fell forward.
The closest analogy, the one her brain reached for and rejected and reached for again, was splashing into a lake. It was cold, but not cold. There was a smell, rich and loamy, the smell of growth and decay. She was aware of her body, the skin, the sinew, the curl of her gut. She was aware of the nerves that were firing in her brain as she became aware of the nerves firing in her brain. She unmade herself and watched herself being unmade. All the bacteria on her skin and in her blood, the viri in her tissues. The woman who had been Elvi Okoye became a landscape, a world. She fell farther in. Cells became molecules, countless and complex and varied. The demarcation of one thing and another failed. There was only a community of molecules, shifting in a vast dance. And then the atoms that made the molecules gave up their space, and she was a breath, a mist, a tiny play of fields and interactions in a vacuum as perfect as space. She was a vibration in nothingness. She rolled onto her side. Something hurt. Everything hurt. And the pain was interesting. A subject of curiosity more than distress. She was breathing. She could feel the air moving through her throat and into the complex network of soft caverns behind her ribs. It was a strange and beautiful sensation. She stayed with it until she began to realize that time existed, that moments were passing. That meant basal ganglia and cerebellum and cerebral cortex were all actually starting to work. She felt distantly surprised about that. She opened her eyes to nothing. She was holding something pressed to her like it was precious, the blue thing, Miller. Only it wasn't blue anymore. It was the closed eyes blackness of everything else. She let it go and sat up. The world was silent. No booming, no chittering. Her breath, the hush of her blood. After a few moments, she drew her hand terminal out of her pocket and turned up the screen brightness, using it like a lamp. All around her, the artifacts of New Terra lay dead. Knife-sharp legs were still, vast, inhuman claws that could have been carved from stone. A spray of silver flecks on the ground showed where the cloud of tiny mechanisms had fallen, a million tiny bodies turned off at once. The light was too dim for colors. Everything was only gray. She sat up and turned reluctantly to the side. It was there. Black and bright at the margins. She felt a stab of almost supernatural fear. She'd thought, hoped, it would be gone. Whatever it was, she had passed through it, been ripped apart by it, and still been simple enough to reassemble herself on the other side. It had saved her, and she had never seen anything in her life that filled her with a deeper dread than that complex darkness. She moved back, her legs aching. She stood. She was aware that she was weeping, without knowing why exactly she was doing it. Hunger and fear and relief and exultation and mortal fear. It was too much. That was fine. The voice that came to her was human and distant, was Holden. Elvi? Elvi, are you there? I'm here, she shouted. Did we win? She took one long breath, then another. Yes, she called. We won. Interlude, the investigator. It reaches out, it reaches out, it reaches out, it reaches out. 113 times a second it reaches out to report that the work is done. If something accepted the report, it could stop. It will never stop.